You are listening to Sunday morning service at Unity of Tustin. Unity of Tustin is a mystical, spiritual community radiating light and love, transforming consciousness. Our mission is healing lives, building dreams, and realizing God. Now, Senior Minister, Reverend Carolyn Mathlin.
Welcome. Welcome to Unity of Tustin. Welcome home to Unity of Tustin. This is an inclusive, mystical, spiritual community, and you are welcome wherever you are, whatever is going on in your life, whoever you are. We hope that you find this as your home. And in that awareness and in that welcoming, let us join together in prayer. So I invite you to take a deep breath in and release it. Feeling the power of invitation. When we are invited, there is this beginning sense of belonging. And so, in this time of stepping inside, I invite you to begin to feel that belonging. Belonging to your commitment and of spiritual journey. Belonging to your commitment to experiencing God. Right here and right now. So, beloved one, essence of all that is, we open to this time that we may live from and as that spirit of truth and that spirit of belonging to truth. May whatever feel outside of that reality become illuminated during this time together. May our mind be opened, our heart be kindled. May what feels impossible begin to melt in the light of our experience here today, so that we truly are the manifestation, the living embodiment of the light and love of God as us. And so it is. Amen. My intention was that we were going to go in the direction of working with forgiveness. That, you know, that there's something in that power of breaking the chain of resentment and holding on to something. That it takes someone to begin that forgiveness work. And it's powerful, and we'll talk about it next week. Because I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about another way we break the chain today. And it has to do with the events in Florida, the shooting. Now, I don't watch the news as a general. I don't watch U.S. news. I watch some international news, but I really don't watch the news per se. So the only way I really know anything that's happening is just like a lot of people my generation and younger, it's on our social media. So I found out about the shooting because I also started seeing, you know, posts about guns and gun lobbying and, you know, prayers and, you know, So, okay, I wonder what happened. I mean, I was pretty sure I knew what happened, but I, you know, started to do some more, dig into a little bit more. And whenever something like this happens, I feel this immediate tension because in my role as minister and minister of a community, I have this should on myself that I should be saying something. I should be modeling what, you know, or using my platform or whatever to hold a certain perspective. And I'll tell you that a lot of times my perspective is I am in prayer. I'm holding what's happening. And And yet I don't know. You know, I don't have anything valuable to add other than my thoughts and prayers. Now, I know the value of thoughts and prayers. I know that prayer changes us, not God. And it changes our relationship to how we might need to act in the world and from what consciousness we act in the world. And that gets repetitive. So I say that on occasion when I have something important, I feel important to add to the understanding, to the discourse that feels like it is generative. And yet I'm also acutely aware that oftentimes as I scroll my Facebook feed, whatever the event is that, and which I am rarely on Facebook, but whatever the event is, it seems to create the opportunity for whatever your position already was, this is your opportunity to spew it out into the world again. And the people who are with you like your post and share it, and the people who are not unfollow you or get annoyed and write a comment back. How is that helping? How is that helping? So I want to have a different conversation today, and we're going to have a contemporary conversation, and we're going to have a little bit of an irreverent conversation. So for the young ears in the room, I just want to let you know we're having a little bit of an irreverent contemporary conversation today, because it's what's real, and it's what I think we want to be leaning into, because this is where our spirituality has feet. This is where our embodiment becomes real. And it has nothing to do with what position you take. It's how you show up. There's a quote by Elie Wiesel, who was just an incredible writer, he said, "We must always take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented." And for some of you, that probably is your guiding principle. And there's, again, we're going to be working with truth. There is truth to that. The question is how. How do we not stay silent? Because silence is dangerous. And speaking out in a way that creates more contempt is also dangerous. So we're going to get nuanced, and we're going to get real. We're going to start with, I'm so excited Patricia Albert is going to be back here. I've been working with her for the last several years, and there's something so powerful about the work that she's bringing, and I really encourage you to be here for it. In her book, Evolutionary Relationships, one of the things that she illuminates are these 8 activating principles of what it means to live in a paradigm of shared reality. I've been working a lot with what is a shared reality recently, and I've become very aware of how often we are not in a shared reality. So these 8 activating principles help kind of point us to how we can live in a shared reality together. And one of those principles is around truth. I remember, bless her heart, we have these teachers in our lives, whether they mean to be or not. And my grandmother, she was a beautiful, beautiful woman, and on occasion would just, know the right word to get me. And she would say, "Just telling the truth." And I'd be like, "No, you're telling your truth. And it's partial, and it's not based in fact or reality, but that's okay." But she was telling the truth. So there's several definitions of truth that we want to start to really tease apart here, because we can use them interchangeably on occasion, and that gets us in trouble. The first one is the literal Merriam-Webster's dictionary definition of the truth, which is something that's quantifiable, it's measurable, it's facts, it's solid in a way, it's stable, it's concrete. This is the scientific world, you know, or some of the scientific world until you get into the quantum world. But you know, where you measure something and you look at data and stats and you go, okay, this is fact, this is truth. There's another definition that we work more with in spiritual circles, where truth is not something that's factual and quantifiable, but truth is principle. And this is where how unity typically defines truth. That there is a spiritual law or principle at work that is pointing to a reality beyond the visible. And it's not measurable. You align with truth. This is actually what I was talking about with prayer. You align with truth. You align with God. And then from that, you live. So we have two pretty much opposite definitions of truth going now, don't we? We have the quantifiable, the measurable, and we have the immeasurable and the transcendent. So let's add a third one into the mix. And that's when we start looking at truth from our post-conventional, pluralistic perspective of everyone has a perspective and everyone has a truth. I got out of jury duty, I'm pretty sure, because of that one time when the prosecutor said to me, the burden of proof says, or the law says, that I only need to give you one piece of evidence or one story, one eyewitness account to tell you what happened. And would you take that as truth, knowing that the law says that you take that as truth? And I said, absolutely not, because everyone has their own perspective. And what one person sees is not necessarily what another person sees. And there's scientific fact to back that up, too. I was not chosen for that jury. He didn't want to hear that. It was only need one person to tell the truth, their truth, and that's enough to convict. So there's this perspective taking. Everyone has a perspective, and it's relative. The very notion that we can definitively say something is true has come into question. And that there's been an assertion, there's been a coming forward that all truth is partial. And that what we experience as truth are mere perspectives, opinions, and perceptions. There's one of the ways that Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, describes truth is that it is that unerring principle. And as you awaken, you start to live from your experience of truth. You live your Christ itself. That's dangerous. When you start looking at every perspective is partial and it's counted as your truth. Because all of a sudden you're enlightened, you're Christed, and you're telling the truth, even though it's simply your perspective. So we've got a lot of different things swirling around this truth. So how do we work with it in the evolutionary collective? And it's really important because there is one of the things that we've been particularly working with is this love of truth over anything else. Love of truth over anything else. Over partiality, over what we don't want to know. And how Patricia works with us and how I've been working with it is that, you know, we start to love the truth more than anything else. And what does that look like? So the truth becomes more of our relationship to reality, knowing that there are multiple layers of reality, knowing that there is both a fixed concept of truth and also an evolving or shifting relativism, and letting those two dance together as we lean into what is holding both of those. What is the fundamental underlying reality? And the way that she particularly describes it, and I love this, is that she talks about the love of truth means the interest and willingness to keep penetrating to ever deeper levels of reality in any given situation, and the dedication not to pull back for fear of what we might find. I love, love, love one of my favorite Bible verses from John chapter 8, verse 32. Any Bible scholars in the room? And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Whose truth? What truth? And spiritual truth is up to interpretation. That's that partiality piece. So continuing to lean in and to not pull back for fear of what we might find. One of the other things that she talks about is if we thought of truth as liberating, we wouldn't spend so much energy manipulating our emotions, avoiding what's real, or trying to protect ourselves from the truth. I've had some pretty honest conversations with myself over this last year and recognize several of those areas, and I'm sure there are many more, of where I have, instead of leaning into the truth, spent a whole lot of energy avoiding it. It's liberating, actually, that the pain of avoiding becomes more acute than the pain of just going, okay, this is how it is. And what we work with is that the tendency to avoid the truth is actually dangerous. And I'm talking about both the relative and the fixed truth. Because when we avoid the truth, it makes us gullible and prone to believing the lies others are telling us. Or it makes us defensive and prone to dismissing everything others are telling us. So we either become gullible or we become defensive. You know, I've become aware of this, you know, movement from instead of being convicted, what if I was curious? So at the board meeting on Thursday night, Debbie De La Cuesta, our board president, shared a part of a book she's reading, and I immediately went, that's incredible. I love that. I need that book. So I got it on Friday, and I've been reading it. And I started with a chapter that she shared the quote from. So this is where we're going to have more of a contemporary, irreverent portion of the service. For some of you, you might have the thought that this place is going to hell in a handbasket. For others, you might feel like this is a breath of fresh air. So hold on. The chapter Debbie shared a quote from was chapter 5 of Braving the Wilderness by Brené Brown. Anyone read that book yet? It's pretty fabulous. Chapter 5's title, Speak Truth to Bullshit. Be Civil. Are you ready? Everyone's still, now no one's passed out yet? I know, I said the S word in church. We'll see if we believed in a smiting God, we might be in trouble. So what does that mean? Brené Brown starts out with a quote from a professor at Harry Frankfurt, wherein he wrote a small paper in 2005 titled On Bullshit. And she references three main points from that paper. The first is that he talks about the difference between BS and lying. And I think that's really important. Lying is a actual defiance of the truth. I remember the first time I lied, I was like 3 or 4, and I wasn't supposed to eat a piece of chicken, and I'd gotten up early, and I did. And of course, you know, I was found out when I woke up, or when my parents woke up, and I remember being in the kitchen, it was morning still, and, you know, I remember my dad, I was standing there, my dad asking me, did you eat this piece of chicken? And I said, no. Now, I know the truth. He knew the truth. It's the truth. I mean, it's quantifiable and measurable. I mean, no one else was in the house, right? I was lying. We all knew the truth. And I said no anyway. I could feel, and I still to this day can remember that sensation of like these new toxins entered my body and my feet curled. And, you know, I could feel that I wasn't telling the truth. I was lying. That's different than what Frankfurt talks about with BS. Because BS, he says, is a wholesale dismissal of the truth. It's we don't even want to know what the truth is. And instead of being curious and leaning in and being in relationship to what might be present, we just say, I'm not going there. And we avoid it completely. And we think we're in the truth as a result, because we don't even know. It's not like lying where we know the truth and we choose to not tell it. There's actually a dismissal that there might be a truth. So that's the first point. The second point is he says we need to recognize how often we rely on BS when we feel compelled to talk about things we know nothing about. We're having a real conversation here today. I do this all the time, don't you? I just was back at Unity Village, and one of my favorite things to do is talk, you know, international events with people, and I have some board members who also are up on that kind of stuff. And so we were talking about the global market and the EU and what the Brexit implications are and how the, you know, Greece's financial crisis and Italy's financial crisis will, you know, potentially break apart the entire EU and what Germany's role is. And I mean, it was a fabulous conversation of which I know very little about. But did that stop me from having it? No. And if I had a microphone in front of me and a video camera, I might have said it on camera, right? Does that make me an expert? No. Should anyone be coming to me for policy decisions on any of that? No. But it didn't stop me from sharing my insightful views on the matter? No. How much do we do that? Especially when we think we know something. Somehow that gives us the carte blanche to speak with authority. Recognize how much we actually rely on dismissing the truth. When was the last time we said, you know what, I really don't know much about that. I really actually don't know much about why the Sunnis and the Shiites are warring with each other. I don't know why there's a lot of guns on the street and gun violence. I don't know exactly why this might be happening. I'm curious. It's actually very courageous to be curious. The third point that he makes is that, and this is where we get into more of the deeper underlying root, BS has its roots in deeper skepticism that we can ever know the truth of how things really are. This is where we might enter despair. Because underneath all of it, there might be this terrifying reality that we'll never know. Or that there isn't some underlying field holding us. And so it's better to pretend than it is to ask or to be curious or to question. She says that when we give up on believing that there are actual truths that can be known and shared observable knowledge, we give up on the notion of objective inquiry. And it takes both. This recognition, for those of you who are familiar with polarity wisdom, when we look at the truth in the world, not the spiritual truth, but truth in the world, there's an interplay of two really important values. One is relative truth, perspective, and observable truth, or facts. And you need both. You cannot get rid of one or the other. And if you over-preference one, then you're creating a whole other dynamic of being stuck. What she talks about is that when we use BS, we're typically under times of emotional stress. And that actually helped me hold kind of these times right now. These times at Unity of Tustin, these times in our just general climate, as I watch, you know, the little news that I do watch. When we feel compelled to speak about things of which we know very little, it's typically because there's some kind of emotional stress or even fear. And what comes typically or arises from that fear is this perspective of you're either with us or against us. And in philosophy, that's called a false dichotomy or a false dilemma. Because the ability to think past either or situations is actually the foundation of critical thinking, and it takes courage. The either or argument actually silences any conversation. It squelches debate or questions or inquiry. And there's a high collective and individual cost from that. Brené says, we pay individually with our integrity. And collectively, we pay with our divisiveness and bypass effective problem solving. And she says, normally we rely on false dilemmas when we are in a place of fear, emotion, or lack of knowledge. I'm going to say that again. Normally we rely on false dilemmas when we're in a place of fear, emotion, or lack of knowledge. The more convicted you are, the more I would suggest you might want to take a look at if there's some fear going on. So she shares a story, she shares a couple of stories, but one of them in particular is very relevant to where we are today. And I'm going to read it verbatim because it's a beautiful illustration of a way to hold these kinds of conversations that allows us to belong to ourselves, belong to a greater conversation, and to hold our integrity. She says, late last year, I was talking to a group of people at an event, and I mentioned that my father and I were looking forward to teaching my son how to shoot skeet. One woman looked horrified and said, "I'm very surprised to hear that you're a gun lover. You don't strike me as the NRA type." If you're reading her comment as aggressive and pointed, then I've communicated it accurately. There was contempt and disgust on her face. I replied, "I'm not sure what you mean by gun lover or the NRA type." She sat straight up in her chair. "If you're teaching your child how to shoot a gun, then I'm assuming that you support gun ownership and the NRA." There it was, the false dichotomy. If I support gun ownership, then I support the National Rifle Association. No way. I'm not buying it. I took a don't lose your shit breath, smiled. Remember, irreverent today. And smiled and said, "You're one for two on your assumptions. I do support responsible gun ownership. I do not in any way support the NRA just because I support responsible gun ownership." She looked mad and confused. "But with all the school shootings, I don't understand why you don't support gun control. Come on, sister. I absolutely do support common sense gun laws. I believe in background checks and waiting periods. I don't believe that it should be legal to sell automatic weapons, large magazines, or armor-piercing bullets. I don't believe in campus carry." She was so angry at this point, she spit out, "You either support guns or you don't." Because I was already working on this book, I said the thing that I've felt my entire life, but was either too afraid to say or didn't have the words. I mustered up the most empathy I could and said, "I know that this is a hard and heartbreaking issue, but I don't think you're hearing me. I'm not going to participate in a debate where the issue is reduced to you either support guns or you don't. It's too important. If you want to have a longer conversation about it, I'm happy to do that. And I wouldn't be surprised if the same issues piss us off and scare us." She excused herself and stormed away. I knew exactly what I could have said in that moment to position myself as the darling of the group. I could have betrayed my actual beliefs and made myself the hero in a heartbeat. I could have avoided the confrontation entirely. But instead, I belonged to me. I did the best I could to debunk the either-or argument. I chose to be out in the open, away from the safety of the ideological bunker that the room had become. And I was decent. I was respectful to her and to myself. She goes on to talk about, the second part of that chapter title is Be Civil. Christine Porath is an associate professor of management at Georgetown, and she talks about incivility, that it can fracture a team, destroy collaboration, splinter members' sense of psychological safety, and hamper team effectiveness. Belittling and demeaning comments, insults, and other rude behavior can deflate confidence, sink trust, and erode helpfulness, even for those who aren't the target of the behaviors. Speak truth to bullshit, be civil. It's both. Actually, Stedney and I attended a conference, a global leadership conference in the summer with Bill Hybels, Reverend Bill Hybels. And it was powerful, but it was interesting. The first thing he led off with, really, was talking about the need in our churches for a code of civility. And I thought, that's ridiculous. Why do churches need codes of civility? Isn't that kind of inherent? Well, I don't know. After these last couple of months, as I've kind of sat through some things, I'm going, maybe a code of civility isn't a bad idea. It's a good place to start, at least. How do we show up with each other? So what is civility? What does this look like? In the face of what might be in front of us, on our Facebook feed, on our in our conversations, in our spiritual community. The first thing she talks about is approach what is occurring with generosity when possible. Don't assume they know better. And I would also say, don't assume you know better. I mean, like, this is for self-compassion. You know, when all of a sudden you're in the need to, I have to say something. I have my personal truth, and I gotta, you know, it might not be based in any fact other than, you know, something I'm working on. But this is a moment of self-compassion of, yeah, we're trained to have a voice no matter what, right? Speak up no matter what. So there's three kind of components to this and not assuming that we know better. The first one is that it can feel shaming or it can feel diminishing to not know something or to all of a sudden have other things come up that might make us feel like we don't know what we're talking about. And so it's in the bluster of, if I'm the loudest voice in the room, that means I'm the rightest voice in the room. So there's compassion there, okay? Sometimes we just, it's based on our bluster, our conviction is based on we're actually concerned that we don't know. The second one is that we believe we are operating from real data, even if we aren't. Don't assume we know. So sometimes we might have data and we think it's real. The third she talks about is that we can get caught up in our own pain and fear, that truth and fact play second fiddle to emotional pleas for understanding or agreement. So our emotionality becomes more important. And when that's the case, then actually what might be going on. And it's important to be generous when that's going on so that we can connect at that level first. The second piece, when we're in the face of these moments of feeling like we need to be more convicted than curious, is this whole practice of civility. And the way that there's actually an Institute for Civility in Government, which I would be curious to see if anyone is paying attention to. Do you know, have you ever listened to some old debates from presidents or even Senate? Like, there was actual policy that was discussed and had the implications of, I mean, it's fascinating. Even to like the 70s and 80s, there was actual conversation about the implications of things so that you could make informed decisions versus now, which is more of just like a throwing mud contest. It's really interesting. But there is a civility in government organization, and they talk about, they define civility as claiming and caring for your needs, identity, and beliefs without degrading someone else's. And they also say civility is the hard work of staying present, even with those whom we have deep-rooted and fierce disagreements. Staying present, even with the people we have deep-rooted and fierce disagreements with. You know, we've entered Lent. It's actually Valentine's Day. And, you know, in Unity we talk about and work with, actually, Charles Fillmore wrote a book, How to Keep a True Lent. And we talk more about not the physical act of giving something up, which you might also do, but more of the spiritual nature of fasting, of letting go of patterns or beliefs that actually are limiting us from being our highest Christed or awake self. And I've been really sitting with this for myself of what might I let go of for Lent. And, you know, my commitment is to let go of this sense of needing to be convicted more than curious. I'd like to fast from my convictions. And I'd be interested, you know, for those of you to really kind of sit with, what are you being asked to potentially fast from during this time? Because I really think that this is part of that, I know this is part of that embodiment of what is real. I know that this is an opportunity to really step into being more curious. because there's nothing to lose and everything to gain by doing that. So with that, go forth and live it. God bless you.
Unity of Tustin is supported through your generous tithes and love offerings. To support Unity of Tustin online, please click the donate button on our homepage. Thank you for listening.